The Pro Wrestling Stories Podcast.
Welcome to the debut edition of the Pro Wrestling Stories Podcast, the show where we take your favorite articles on ProWrestlingStories.com, surprise, surprise, and bring them to life in the form of audio. You can listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts and follow Pro Wrestling Stories on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Stories and on Twitter, PWS_official. I'm your host, Chris Toplak, former radio personality, voiceover artist, longtime podcaster, and contributor to Pro Wrestling Stories.
And I'm your other co-host, Corey Rivard. I'm a filmmaker, actor, voice actor, writer, and despite my best efforts, a diehard forever eternal, cannot be changed, classic wrestling fan.
But we wouldn't want to change you in the first place, though, right?
It's not possible. It's not going to happen. Wrestling forever, apparently.
Yes, and this is where we dive into the archives and we focus on a story. And today, Corey, we're going to focus on the toughest man in pro wrestling history, Haku, a.k.a. Ming, a.k.a. Tama Tonga, a.k.a. King Haku. You get the point, right? But this man is a legitimate badass.
So many stories we'll talk about from the article itself. So many stories you've just heard everywhere. Stone Cold calling him the baddest motherfucker in the business.
And when Stone Cold says it, you know it's true, right? That's the one guy where I take stock in his opinion above almost anybody else.
Yeah, that's the Bible right there. Vampiro saying he went to Mexico with him. He would watch him climb palm trees and grab coconuts and break them with his bare hands.
My God.
Shane Douglas saying you'd better be off fighting the U.S. Army than fighting Haku. So many things.
So the article is titled Ming. You could call it Haku, Ming, whatever you want. I don't want to tick them off, so we'll go with Ming. Tales of Wrestling's Toughest SOB, written by Pro Wrestling Stories. And if you stick around until the very tail end of the episode, we'll actually bring up a few additional quotes. You have a very intriguing one, by the way, that will further support the article's title. I believe by the time we get through this, it's going to be true.
Let's do this. Let's begin. Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, God. So Ming, a noun. You tell me more about that, Corey, because this is written in the article, and I like it. It's actually pretty clever.
Yeah. So this is the article starts. Ming, a noun, a four-letter word meaning danger. If near, high risk of harm or injury, risk, peril. If you're not familiar with who he is, let us introduce you to one of the most terrifying men in professional wrestling. Here are the tales of one of professional wrestling's toughest men, Ming, as told by some of the biggest names in the business.
Oh boy. Starting with Rick Martel, former AWA World Heavyweight Champion, former WWF Tag Team Champion, Rick Martel, who, by the way, long overdue for a Hall of Fame selection. Why is he not there? Had the following to say about Ming wrestling. You don't have to convince me that it's real. Convince the people, you know? I mean, that's what art of wrestling is. We all know it's a work, so man, look like you're taking somebody's head off, but don't really do it. So I'll give you an example. King Haku. I would put this guy against anybody in a real fight. He could kill anybody. This guy's a killing machine. Ask anybody in pro wrestling who's the toughest mother you know you've ever met. It's this guy. But in the ring, he'd give you a sidekick or whatever, and you would barely feel it. That is art. Now, the polar opposite with that would be Goldberg, who, of course, concussed Bret Hart, took him out of the business in general, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's got to be such a fine balance if you know that you can destroy these people, and you're actually known as a delicate man in the ring. But you know that you're the toughest one in the whole federation.
Very much so. Bam Bam was the same way. Actually, to quote Bret Hart, I believe he said, "Hey, listen, Bam Bam, 400 pounds, 6'4", he'd dive off the top turnbuckle, land a flying headbutt. You would feel nothing, light
that's
as a
amazing.
Feather."
That's the biggest beast, the beast from the east. That's incredible. Moving on to Ric Flair. Ric Flair comparing MMA fighters to Haku. Woo. Don't ever think that anybody would mess with Haku. If he was a young guy and he got into MMA, my God, he'd have done everything. He was the toughest son of a bitch I've ever met in my whole life. No lie. Take my word for it.
I heard that in the cadence and delivery of Ric Flair. Don't ever think that.
Just so, screaming and spitting everywhere.
So imagine him in MMA. I'm a massive MMA fan, a bit of an encyclopedia there. And I would imagine he would be more of like a Tank Abbott style, just tough, not really technical, but back in the day, Tank Abbott, again, he was later exposed. You'd have to take a 2x4, break it over his head to take him down.
Right. And I wonder how far that would get him now, or Haku now in general.
Not very far now, though, because you could just take him down and submit him potentially if he wants to submit or he passes out.
Exactly. Which brings up the larger question of Haku versus Brock Lesnar in an actual fight. Go.
I would take Haku. I got to be honest.
Take Haku.
Brock, on the sheer toughness, could take him down with the technical ability, the NCAA collegiate background. But Haku, the stories that we're about to hear, I think that he would be a force to be reckoned with over Brock Lesnar. I think Brock would just say, not worth it today, boys and girls.
just step out of that one.
What about you? Who would you take?
Yeah. Well, from what I've heard. So Jim Cornette says Haku would defeat him in a flat-out street fight, no rules, because he'd grab a beer bottle or he'd just take his eye out or whatever.
Yeah.
But if there are rules to the match, then Brock might be able to identify what a rule is a little better than Haku might.
True.
But in an actual, just a flat-out brawl, it's looking like Haku, I think.
I think so, because there's no breaks in terms of the action. You're not going to have them sitting on stools after 5 minutes and say, that's the round. Haku would probably still be standing. I'm not going to sit on a stool.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. What's Brock doing? And Brock's like, can I throw in the towel? This is about it for me. This guy's a maniac.
Yeah, send me 3 more Brocks. Let's go.
Tag team MMA. That's what we need to see.
Exactly. A ladder match in MMA.
Oh, boy. Title on the line.
Royal Rumble, Battle Royal. All right. Perry Saturn. Perry Saturn says, after being asked who would win in a fight between the Barbarian, Meng, Scott Norton, Jim Duggan, Fit Finlay, Scott Steiner, Rick Steiner, and himself, he says, Tonga. Nobody else would stand a chance. Not even a question. He could kill everyone without blinking, and there's nothing anyone could do about it.
Those are some legitimate tough guys, too. The Steiners in their prime were so feared. And so notorious for just doing whatever they wanted.
I like having Jim Duggan in there, too.
He's a tough guy, too. Back in the day in Mid-South, he was legit because as his career spanned into WWF, he was very larger than life, cartoonish, of course. But he was a tough guy. He was a former football player, too.
It was his catchphrase. Tough guy.
Tough guy. Yeah, he's legit and he's deceptively big. Met him in person. Shook his hands, and they are oven mitts. They are massive.
I did the same, actually. But again, all these tough guys are the sweetest guys.
They are.
In the whole business, oddly enough. Goes hand in hand, apparently.
But you know what, though? You think about these guys, and this is the story that always comes up in my eyes. So remember Bret Hart gets jumped at the Hall of Fame. And we see the New Day. We see Shane. We see Travis Brown, former MMA fighter, I guess current, but he's not really actively competing. We see everybody dive into the ring. And they take this guy down, and of course, Harry Smith Jr. dives in, throws some punches. If it happened with any of those guys there, he would be dead. No word of a lie, he would have been dead.
Oh, yeah. Just chuck one Steiner in there, please. Oh. I wish. Turn back time and have a Steiner later on.
Steiner recliner, and then Rick's just pounding on him, right?
Oh, please.
So Ted DiBiase now. Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, but this is back when he did not have that gimmick at times, right? He was in Mid-South as well, too. So one time we were in a rough part of St. Louis for a show. He may have been with WWF at the time. Everyone had been drinking and a large fight broke out. Surprise, surprise. It causes a lot of problems, so they say, with alcohol, but also a lot of solutions can be dealt with, too, which resulted in the police showing up. Meng had a few drinks, but saw the fight break out, so he started trying to break it up. Hey, great Samaritan there. In the process, police thought that he was part of the fight. They maced him, then handcuffed him. Meng was cuffed behind his back, looked at the police, snapped the handcuffs off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Has that happened for any other person on earth? Is that even physically possible with anyone else?
I don't think so. I got to ask all the people I know who have been arrested, which aren't very many, and say, has this happened to you? And they'd be thinking, no, I was just fearful I would be thrown in jail.
Yeah, exactly. I heard he yelled, is this all you got, when he was put in the handcuffs prior to the snapping. Yeah.
I just picture them backing off going, you know what, gentlemen, not today. Don't think
so. Of course.
How about this one? This might be my favorite story, by the way. Spoiler, Corey. Bobby Heenan, Bobby the Brain. I admire the hell out of this man. And he says, Ming is the toughest man, not just wrestler, I've ever met in my life. A fight once broke out in a bar, and Ming took his two fingers on his right hand. That's his index finger and trigger finger. And he reached into the guy's mouth, and he broke off the guy's bottom teeth. And he says, if I hadn't been there and seen it for myself, I wouldn't have believed it. That is outrageous.
That's about as outrageous as it gets.
Just think about that. Like, reach your hand, like your fingers into your mouth. Try and pull your bottom teeth. You can't move them, right?
You got to get a pretty good grip on them.
It's not going to happen.
That is about as nasty as it gets.
So, I think that's nuts, though.
Yeah, that is absolutely disgusting. All right, moving on to Rick Steiner.
Yeah, and I was going to say, even before that, there is a story, though. I'm not going to dive into it, but I do want to mention this, that Bobby Heenan says that Andre the Giant, a man legitimately 7 feet tall, he could have done whatever he wanted in the ring with anybody on any given night. He said he only feared two people, Harley Race and Haku, and Harley Race only feared one man. Who was that? Haku. A testament to this man's sheer tenacity.
Like, that's the gold medal. That's the gold standard. You can't defeat that argument.
From Harley Race, absolutely. The world's heavyweight champion. Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah, that is. You can't argue with that. All right. Rick Steiner. Rick Steiner, of course, as we said, being one of the toughest guys in the industry. He says, one time, Meng fought off eight police officers. They shot him with mace, and he closed his eyes and sucked it in. He just opened his mouth and took a deep breath. I mean, some of the stuff he did was like, what the hell? Scotty and I always thought we were tough guys, but that was before we met Meng. Now, this seems like a Godzilla movie or something. Does. Yeah.
Is it real? Like, that's one where I do have to think, are they blowing it out of proportion or did this happen, right? Because, I mean, there's enough evidence to prove that Ming was this tough, but did this actually occur?
I'm sticking with yes. I think they could have shot a tranquilizer dart at him, used a taser. I think he just keeps marching on like a
bear. A bear, right? Like a big grizzly bear salivating, just wanting that steak, right?
Yeah. Again, yelling, is that all you got?
I love that tagline. Why wouldn't they play that up in WCW or WWF? I feel as though they never gave him his fair shake. He's a solid worker. Didn't hurt anybody. Not too snug. Has a great reputation. A nice guy. Why not push him a little bit further?
I actually saw an interview with him where he talked about how Race might have had a, you know, that's a whole different topic, but how he didn't have the look in the 80s to be the guy. And so he kind of believed that was the deal. But his sons are now top of the food chain in New Japan. And he's happy that things have turned around.
I was going to say, good for them. And what a shame too, because if that were true, if that were in fact accurate, it should be the opposite. You look at him and I think that's a marketable look. You could actually take him to the top there.
Yeah. He's so right. You know, he's so recognizable. You have posters of that guy everywhere. And believable, and it's real.
Yeah, he is as believable as it gets, for sure.
Yeah, kayfabe would have skyrocketed. All right, Arn Anderson. There are three types of men in the world. There are tough men, there are wrestler tough men, and then there's Meng. He's in a completely different category than anyone else on the planet. There was one instance where a large cowboy was arguing with Meng, and he pushed the cowboy through two different sets of doors using only one hand.
I want them to define what a large cowboy is.
Yeah, what's a large cowboy, Arn? To Arn Anderson, what's a large cowboy?
Well, there's also that George Carlin quote that always comes to mind where you hear, like, cowboys. Like, the closest he's ever been is taking a piss out of roadside Arby's.
I have a feeling this is a larger cowboy.
Probably. It's not like some 5'6" cowboy that's walking in with chaps saying, yeah, you know, I ride some horses in the Midwest.
Bart Gunn.
Bart Gunn, yes. I'm sure we'll cover that at some point, the Brawl for All. And the disaster that was.
Oh, can't wait.
We'll have to have a few Steve Weisers for that one, too.
I'm all over that, please.
So, Brutus, brother Brutai, Brutus the Barber Beefcake, apparently he made a big mistake, especially in the respect department. He went to management, and he complained that Haku was, quote, too stiff in the ring. Now, this completely goes against theories we heard earlier where Rick Martel said he was light as a feather. So it seems as though Brutus may have just been barking up the wrong tree, so to speak. So he went to management. He complained about that Haku slapped him too hard during the match. Guess what happens? Haku finds out, walks straight up to Beefcake's locker room, grabs him out of the shower. That's pretty intimidating to see Haku there, and he just yanks you out. Not even a warning. Starts choking him, lifts him 2 feet off the ground with his hands there. He's looking scared. I believe he slaps him pretty hard, and the only person who could talk him down was Brother Hulk Hogan. Now, I ask, why would you poke the bear in the first place?
You're not wrong. Well, Brutus isn't known for being the brainiest guy in the business or the most loyal. Although I heard that Brutus claims, at least, that he ended up spending the rest of his life as Haku's close friend. So I guess things turned around after that incident. Not sure how true that is, but
perhaps they did. Maybe he's just telling himself that to escape the nightmares every night.
I think he tells himself a lot of stuff.
Probably, I've heard some stories about him I will not share on the podcast that happened at parties. And whether he wants to refute them or not, but maybe sometime I'll share them here. But one of them was outrageous.
Ooh, wow. That might be designed specifically for this podcast.
It could be. And then, we'll bring him on and he'll refute them. And then he'll come after me. And then I'll call Haku and then we'll be even.
That sounds like a fun weekend. I'm down.
Eric Bischoff. You know him as the former president of WCW. Well, he said that he never even fired Ming from WCW. In fact, Ming was never fired from WCW because no one was brave enough to do it. Surprise, surprise. On one particular day, Greg Gagne and I walked into the locker room and interrupted a conversation between Ming, Chris Candido, Chris Jericho, and Tammy, of course, otherwise known as Sunny. And apparently, Ming immediately looked at the pair and said, "Hey, apologize to my friends. I'm talking to them." The entire room went silent. Everyone just froze. It was then that I realized the stories about Ming weren't just legends. Gagne and I were forced to apologize. We waited for the conversation to finish before speaking with Ming. So what does that say, Corey, when the man in charge of WCW was too petrified to release an employee in fear of his own life?
I mean, there's so many examples of the inmates running the asylum in the wrestling business, but usually that's business related and not brawn related. Not that they're scared to get beaten up by the talent. So that's one of the only times I've ever heard something like that.
Yeah, you would never hear that from Vince. You got to give credit to Vince McMahon that Vince would still march in there and just do it. I mean, even after the Montreal Screwjob, he knew I owe one to Brett. And Brett threw an uppercut that was heard around the world, apparently. Knocked the chairman on his tuchus. So all of a sudden, you have Eric Bischoff saying, I'm not going to do it. I think that does show a lot there, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Of course. Of course.
It's his company, essentially.
It's his company. And pretty sure Haku was the last hardcore champion. And he just, appropriately enough, and he just walked out with the belt and was in the rumble the next week. So that's how much control WCW had over Ming or wrestling in general.
I'm leaving the show. I'm going to go eat. I'll come back when I want. Sure thing. Yeah. Sure thing, Ming. You do whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. All right. Jesse Barr, Jimmy Jack Funk.
You don't hear that name very often, do you?
No. Well, first podcast. We should mention Jimmy Jack Funk every episode, I think.
This one goes out to Jesse Barr. Yeah.
The weekly Jimmy Jack Funk episode, or shout out. All right, here's how the story goes. Ming and Jesse Barr, Jimmy Jack, both traveled to Puerto Rico. Barr decided it was a great idea to literally kick dirt onto a man who was digging ditches, which idiotically angered Ming, who told Barr he made a mistake. Stupidly, Barr grabbed Meng's face and started to engage in an argument. In retaliation, Ming grabbed Barr and popped his eyeball out of his socket.
Oh.
Yes, with his bare fingers.
That's disgusting.
Some wrestlers still claim to this date it was completely torn out, but Ming refutes this. He says, "I didn't take his eyeballs off. I was ready to. My hands were in there, ready to take his eyes off. But then I realized how stupid we were. Here we are, brothers on the road together. I told Jim after all these things, and he got fired for it and all these things here. And I feel bad for him. It was something that happened at the moment."
The voice of reason, Haku.
He kind of does sound like a voice of reason.
He does.
Yeah, but then is sometimes completely unreasonable. Rocky Johnson said he pulled it out and stomped on it, and that he saw it and said it was the worst beating he's ever seen.
Oh, that's ridiculous, though. Like, he pulled it out, he gave it an elbow drop, dusted it back off, handed it back to him.
I choose to believe that. I'm going to choose to believe every single one of these stories. Some people are claiming that he wrestled with a glass eye for the rest of his career.
Which, wow.
Texas Tornado, you know, fake leg.
I can't wait to get to that one, too, where we talk about Kerry Von Erich. I've had so many side conversations where they bring up his drug use, and I think the man had half of his foot amputated. Of course he was dependent on medication, right?
Of course, exactly. I'm pretty sure the no leg was probably a bigger detriment to the career than the no eye, but that's a tight one.
Yeah, we're going to have to put that in a narrow race.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right. Then Meng on taking particular offense when anyone called wrestling fake.
Don't use that word to any single fan. If you walk up to any wrestler and use that word, man, you better say a little prayer.
And yeah, don't choose Meng as your go-to either.
Say
that too. Yeah. All right. So when I walk in and you tell me it's fake, I'll show you how fake the business is. Whether I take your teeth out or take your eyeballs off or whatever it was in those days, maybe they're going to kick my butt around, but watch it. I'm coming back and finding you. But those were those days. I'm glad nobody picked up a gun and shot my ass. But in those days, that's how it was. It's my love for the business. What sweet words.
What a sweetheart, right?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people did that as well, too. Remember David Schultz? He did that famously. He was fired from WWF, but you know what? You have to defend the integrity of the business, right?
Of course. And I think in David Schultz's case, he said he was doing it from in character, that he thought his character would do that.
But Vader did something very similar, though, too. I think, where was it? I forget exactly where it was, but I know Undertaker was part of the interview as well, too. And he grabbed the interviewer, and it did not go over well.
Whew. I'll have to YouTube that after. I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's a very scary interview. And you and I both know Vader is a very intimidating human being. So imagine him standing in front of you, getting mad, grabbing you. And what's hilarious is Undertaker's just sitting there doing nothing. Because he knows, like, I'm not going to break, you know, character that much. So I'm just going to sit here, let it ride out. I could see him later sipping on some JD, some Jack Daniels, saying, brother, you pushed a little too far. Calm down. Okay, Vader?
Yeah.
Don't ruin this for all of us.
The real voice of reason of all of wrestling.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
Kevin Sullivan, he has some stories about Meng as well, too. He says on one occasion, now, of course, for context, Kevin Sullivan was often one of the bookers. He was always on the writing committee, seemingly, in WCW. So on one occasion, he was a booker in WCW. He was promoted, demoted, about as often as Big Show turns heel, right? And then babyface back again. So he said, I asked Meng to do something that wasn't major. But it wasn't completely the right thing to do. Meng got a little upset, and it was the most scared I've ever been in my entire life, despite Meng not even being that angry. I've also used Meng to my advantage when I had to inform a few guys that they were losing an upcoming match, when the wrestlers would become upset, and they told me they refused to do the job. Surprise, surprise. I told them instead of arguing, I would just go get Meng and have him take care of the situation. Then all of a sudden they're saying, you know what? I'll lose as many matches as you want. Just don't bring the big man involved.
Right.
That's hilarious. And then Kevin Sullivan also talking about traveling up and down the roads in WCW. And this was on WWE Classics. He shared a story that really went in regards to a local deciding to call Meng a derogatory word at a bar, which is an ultimate no-no. The next thing I know is that Meng goozles the guy like Mr. Spock. I don't know where that reference comes from.
Goozling,
It was fast and furious. And then he grabbed another guy who tried to get involved and knocked him unconscious. And Meng bit through the guy's shirt like a wolf bit a chunk out of the guy's back, then spit it on the floor. He said, I said, it's time to go. So there you go. And oh, by the way, Sullivan claims that there were no charges ever filed, despite the fact the police pulled into the parking lot. So much like earlier we told the story, I would imagine they took one look at Meng and said, not today.
Yeah. Obviously would have had their work cut out for them. I feel like if the internet was around back then and just one of these stories got out, probably people in bars wouldn't be calling Meng a derogatory term at all, you know, but these stories were probably just small and inside the circle of trust, and no one knew about them. But now, if that got out, it'd be like, oh, stay away from that guy, obviously.
All the dirt sheets would pick it up. They would report it for days. They would have a lot of ammunition, that's for sure.
Exactly. Do we go to the proverbial main event here now? Or?
Oh, I think we do. I think we have to. This is the one that I've been anticipating. I've read it many, many times, but this is the story where legends are created, Corey.
Yes, this is the one. This is the probably if you've heard a Haku story, this is the one you've heard. All right. It was in the Baltimore airport. There was a hotel there. These are in Meng's words.
It was like, I'm reading this as a story. It was a dark, gloomy day.
I'll get in character here. It was in Baltimore airport. There was a hotel there. We were staying at another hotel, the Marriott or something. There was another hotel there, though. It was hopping at the time. The music was playing and it was packed. It was during the week, I believe. Me and Siva Afi went over and there were lots of baby faces there at the bar. So we went and sat in the other corner away from them. When they were ready to close, we had a few drinks, and on our way out there were five guys just sitting there. Of course, the same thing came out. The fake stuff.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Hey, are you guys with those guys, the wrestlers, the fake wrestlers on TV?
Oh, God.
You know, I said, yeah, I'll show you. And I reached over without thinking. There are four other guys there, he says, laughing. Grabbed his face and bit his nose off, as one does. And then the fight started. Me and Siva kind of cleaned house there and left. I'll never forget it. And he laughs.
I love the fact that he's just laughing multiple times. And he said, you know, grabbed his face and bit his nose off, as though that was obvious. Yeah. That's the first thing that you hear in a fight, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he'll never forget it. Like, that was an option. One of the times I ate a guy's nose. I forget which one.
And you know what's funny, though, is that there's another. It's not as infamous, but airport story. And I heard this on Talk is Jericho. Jericho was talking about traveling to Mexico. And Haku came to his aid in a Mexican airport where they fought off authorities. This was back in 1993. They even pulled guns on them and eventually demanded money. So this escalated very quickly.
Well, I mean, if we only have two airport stories out of all the time Haku spends in airports, I mean, that's not so bad.
Let's face it, there's probably more, right?
Yeah. They serve alcohol in airports, so we know how that affects the man.
My God. And it's crazy because the stories just keep coming. But the one thing that stands out to me, Corey, is that he's a loyal friend, especially in that Jericho story. He's there with his brother in the trenches saying, if you go down, I go down with you.
Absolutely. Again, go back to all these tough guys seem like the biggest sweethearts, the most loyal guys. He's a notorious family man. He's going to, you know, if you want to keep all your limbs, you want to be close to that guy as much as possible, right? Keep him as your best bud.
No kidding. My goodness. And then even Jake Roberts, his quote, it's so blown out of proportion. This is the one that I remember the most, but I remember hearing this saying, wow, if this is true. I mean, his reputation must precede him then.
Jake goes on to say, if I had a gun and was sitting inside a tank with one shell left and Meng is 300 yards away, he's mine, right? Well, the first thing I'm going to do is jump out of the tank and shoot myself because I don't want to wound that son of a bitch and have him pissed off at me.
So Jake Roberts would rather commit suicide than deal with Meng 300 yards away.
Yeah. Good. Need to, we say more?
Good to clarify that, Jake.
Yeah, thanks, Jake. Okay.
So I was going to say, one that I heard about, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it, Corey, is the DX invasion. So I heard rumblings for years that if WCW had sent out Meng, that basically they were told, being DX, to abandon the show and to hightail it out of there. So let's say that they get to the show. Remember, they're knocking on the door famously. They're out there. You see the fans. But they had instructions to leave if they sent Meng out. Why didn't they? That would have been amazing.
Exactly. That would have changed the course of wrestling history, really. One man just shut down all of DX. That changes everything.
Could you imagine that, though? He walks out and goes, you want to start something? And they're like, just get out of here. I don't care if the segment bombs. Just do this.
I mean, he'd be in the Hall of Fame by now if they had pulled that one move. That'd be the single most legendary. That'd be like Hulk Hogan body slamming Andre the Giant versus Haku body slamming all of DX basically out of the WCW arena. That's insane.
No kidding. And I mean, the side note to that is it would be so smart to send him out, but to show you the discrepancy between WWF at the time and WCW, there's always that famous quote that Vince would have said, "Let them in. Let them come in. I don't care. I'm going to get them on my show." Right? And then it backfires. That's
true. Yeah, that's true. Man, that again, turn back time. That would have been incredible.
Send
out your toughest guy.
It's true. That's what you would normally do, though, wouldn't you? If there was an invasion anywhere, let's say it's a different Hollywood studio and you're there.
Yeah.
Right? You have MGM, yeah. You have someone else. You're like, oh, not today. We're going to send out the big guns.
Send out Eastwood.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Dwayne Johnson had a more heartfelt one, and I like this one because that is his uncle. He said, "My uncle Tonga is a family man, humble man, and champion. Most importantly, one of the greatest human beings I know." That speaks volumes coming from the people's champion, The Rock.
And who is one of the nicest guys on the planet. Again, tons of stories of him being a great, great family guy, family first. Everything was about making money for his family. And I'm sure all the violence was about making sure no one's taking food off of his family's plate, right?
Exactly. Well, it's survival of the fittest, right?
Exactly. And he's the fittest. All right, former wrestler manager, Frenchie Martin. I'm not going to do the accent. I'm going to tell you the truth. If you have a chance to go to hell instead of meeting Meng, you might as well go to hell because he's unbelievable.
Wow.
That might be the statement out of all the statements. That's saying a lot.
That might be the title of the article. Let's just replace it. Meng Tales of Wrestling's Toughest SOBs and just put that in there.
Yeah, I think that's official now. I've seen him take two guys by the throat like this. Demonstrate throat thrust. They were both fainting, and then a kick there, a kick there. He had six guys laying down in the bar there.
My God.
The bouncer came in, but I knew the owner, and I said, "Get the bouncer out of there or he's dead." And they got him out. That's incredible.
That's prompt. I like that. Wow, Frenchie Martin, what a story. So yeah, I have to ask you, Corey, after reading this article together, do you feel Meng is definitively the toughest SOB in pro wrestling history?
Is it even possible to refute that after all that?
I don't think so.
I've never heard anyone come close to two of these stories, never mind 12.
Now, here's my other question for you. So, of course, I would agree, by the way, Meng is number one. I'm not going against any of those quotes, by the way. I don't want a phone call from him or a social media post or anything from him saying, hey, brother, I've heard this. Let's have a conversation. I'm going to fake my own death at that point. So I ask you this. Who else would you be afraid of? Let's say you're a pro wrestler. You just entered the locker room for the very first time. Who would you be petrified of? I'm assuming he's on the list, but who else?
He's on the list, but I mean, personally, I couldn't take Dink the Clown, Michael Cole, Todd Pettengill, Sonny Elizabeth. I'm not winning against anybody. But truthfully, I guess that, you know, your stories of obviously the Steiners, Bruiser, Dr. Death, Harley, obviously,
yeah.
Kurt Hawk. Hawk is a maniac a little bit. Jerry Sags almost killed Ken Shamrock. So, you know, all those. How about yourself?
I mean, I got to go back to a classic, Undertaker. From the time I was little till now, it's just the amount of respect that he commands. It's the size, the legitimacy. I think it would be Taker for me, but Harley as well, too, just because he's the definitive man's man, and you don't want to disappoint him, right? But Meng would be on that list, of course, at the very top for me.
So Undertaker for all the mythical reasons.
I don't want to end up in the casket or anything like that, too.
That's fair.
So
we run around like Kamala.
So I wanted to say we end the show on a Dink the Clown reference. And I can't believe it. You've amazed me.
Well, we're going to have to do that every episode, too. Dink the Clown reference every episode. And
Jumpin' Jack, right? Jimmy Jack, so we'll include them, and we'll get some good ones there. So it concludes our very first episode of the Pro Wrestling Stories podcast. Sincerely hope that you join us for future episodes as we dive deep into the archives to bring you more of these articles to life in the audio form. So you can listen and subscribe wherever podcasts are available. We hope you join us for this journey. Final words from you, Corey.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's all we need to say. Follow Pro Wrestling Stories on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Stories and on Twitter, PWS_official. From Chris Toplak, Corey Rivard, happy trails to you until we meet again.